Welcome back to Computers 98 on 850 The Buzz. Our sponsors this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Our sponsors this morning, Computer Renaissance with two great area locations. One at Crossroads Shopping Center in Cary, and the other at North Hills Plaza, across from North Hills Mall. And by Mindspring, you can find them at 1-888-MSPRING or on the web, www.mindspring.com. And I'm Amnon, your host, here with Larry Dial. And John Conrad, our producer screener. And our number is 860-0850, pound 850 if you're a 360 communication customer. And with us on the phone, like we promised, is Bob Kruger. Good morning, Bob. Good
morning, Amnon.
And Bob is the president.
I'm actually the
Vice President
for Enforcement at the Business Software Alliance.
Oh, geez, this is scary.
It is scary. Good morning, Bob. I'm Larry.
Business Software Alliance.
Yeah,
what is the Business Software
Alliance? Well, we're the watchdog organization that represents the leading publishers of business software as they fight software piracy. We're the guys who go after businesses, who go after people who are out there copying or distributing pirated software.
What can let's say that I have a copy of Office on my computer at home. What happens? A pirated copy.
Well, it's a good place to start, because you know, I think when most people think about software piracy, they probably think about people creating counterfeit product in China, you know, and sending it into the country or something like that. But really, in reality, software piracy is a big problem here in the United States, and a lot of it has to do with people copying software on their computers. You know, very, very simple, very basic form of piracy, people making copies of software programs on their computers. You know, and where this happens most often is actually in the workplace, where you'll find the business has a single copy of a word processing program, and they go ahead and they install it onto all of their office workstations. You know, and for the business, you can save some money that way. But for the manufacturer or the publisher of the software program, that's getting ripped off. That's losing a lot of the sales that you would otherwise make. So in the United States, you know, we have a big problem. We estimate one out of every four software programs out there is pirated. That's in the United States alone. And some of it is at home. Some of it is on home computers, people copying pirated software onto their home computer. You know, the question of what happens? Well, you know, I think a lot of people are unaware how really serious the consequences can be. If you copy software, a lot of bad things can happen to you. First of all, of course, you run a greater risk of contracting a software virus. Second, you lose all the benefits you get with legal software. You can't buy an upgrade. You can't get technical support. You don't have access to product information. But most severe, perhaps, are the legal consequences. You can be sued. You can be sued for copyright infringement. And if you're a business, you could be sued, and the copyright owners can come after you for a lot of money. And finally, you could be criminally prosecuted. So you know, we're out there trying to explain to people why this is a bad idea, why you should buy legal software.
Okay, now, I always go back to the early 80s when AutoCAD was the target of anybody who can. I mean, this was the ultimate in, oh, I've got a copy of AutoCAD.
Yeah.
So I got me a copy of AutoCAD from somebody. And, you know, what do you do with it? Wow, okay, so I've got a copy.
Yeah.
And you play with it for about an hour, and you realize there's nothing you can do with it. But as a result, a friend of mine who works for a big company locally saw it and went and talked to his boss engineer. And they bought two copies. So So in a way, I look at it as, wow, you know, I mean, here, if I didn't have that copy, it would probably, they would wait a long time before they would come across it to buy it.
So you're saying that in that situation, piracy is actually good for
the
company?
No, I'm not saying it's good. Well, yeah, in a way, it's good.
Yeah, because it, well...
But I want one thing kind of clear. I never believe that if you pirate a copy and you're not using it, that it's actually pirating a copy.
Yeah. Well, two things I should say about that.
Yeah, okay.
First off, actually, it is illegal.
So yeah.
Just so people know, it is, because the way the laws are written, it's if you make a unauthorized copy, whether you use it or not, you've committed copyright infringement. So, I understand your point. It's well taken that, you know, for somebody who makes a copy, doesn't use it, it doesn't seem as like it's as serious an offense as if you make a copy and you use it. But just so everybody out there knows, it's still breaking the law. And the second thing is, you're absolutely right. You know, if pirated software is out there and people see it, maybe some of those people will actually buy legal software, and you could say, well, gee, then you did the industry some good. But that's kind of like saying, if I go to a car dealership and I test drive a nice car and I decide instead of returning it to the lot, I'm going to keep it, and then my neighbors see it and say, oh, that's a nice car, they'll go out and buy it. Well, you know, if I'm the car dealership, from my perspective, you just ripped me off. You just stole one of my cars. Thanks, but no thanks. I'll be the guy who decides how I market my products.
Good point. Larry.
Yeah, Bob. A question that happens a lot, that I hear a lot, is the homeowner or the person who has two or three computers at home.
Right.
And they buy a copy of, let's say, Microsoft Office, and they put it on two or three of their machines.
Right.
Are they violating copyright rules?
You know, it's a good question, because there's some real uncertainty out there about, you know, what am I allowed to do? Even people who are trying to play by the rules,
mm-hmm.
you know, say, well, you know, I don't know, can I use it in my home and in my office computer? You know, can I put it on more than one computer in my house? And maybe some of your listeners won't really like the answer, but the unfortunate fact is you have to look at the license agreement. And I say, you know, you won't like the answer, because a lot of people say, gosh, you try to read those license agreements? You know, they're really complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm a lawyer. I'm a lawyer, and I have trouble reading them sometimes. But, you know, the fact of the matter is all the answers are really in the agreement. And the reason you have to read the agreement is because they vary.
Mm-hmm.
Some companies won't let you install a software program onto more than one PC. They won't let you install it at home and at your office. Some companies will.
They call it per CPU.
Yeah, per CPU, right. Exactly. But some companies will allow you to do home and office use. Some companies will allow you to have what they call concurrent use privileges. If you're not using it on more than one computer at the same time,
right.
It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it varies. And you know, here's an important point for the consumer. Not all licenses are the same. And therefore, if you can find out what the company's license permits, you might be able to buy a product based on whether you like the license agreement or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
You know, so I think consumers should take advantage of that. And I think that the software companies, I represent software companies, but I'll tell you right off, they haven't done a good enough job informing the consumer about these license agreements, what they permit, what they don't permit.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, because more and more people are going to be having more than one computer at home.
Absolutely. And if I'm in that situation, I want to keep my costs down. I want to buy as few software products as I have to.
We're talking with Bob Kroger, VP of the Enforcement Division of the Business Software Alliance, and you're tuned to Computers 98 on 850 The Buzz. Larry, you've got
another question. How do you get leads?
That's the key question.
That's the key question.
It really is, because you know, when I came to this job, I was actually a federal prosecutor before I joined BSA.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you're a prosecutor and you want to go out and investigate something, you've got some pretty powerful tools available to you. You can issue grand jury subpoenas and make people come in and answer your questions under oath. But you know, as a director of enforcement, as a vice president of enforcement for this organization, it's a private organization, especially a nonprofit organization. I wasn't sure how we were going to find out about any of these cases and how we were going to investigate them. Well, it turns out we set up this hotline. It's 888-NO-PIRACY. That's how you dial in. And we get calls every day, sometimes half a dozen a day, from people who say to me, listen, I want to report piracy where I work or where I used to work. You know, usually it's a guy or a woman who calls and says, I work for a company, and I'll tell you something, they're using pirated copies of your software to run their business. It's an engineering company, and they're using pirated AutoCAD, or it's a design company, and they're using pirated Adobe products. We've got a pirated netware on our network, so on our servers. So, varies, but it's almost always somebody who has inside information about what's happening at the place where they used to work. Sometimes we get calls from people who say, there's a guy who's selling pirated software in my town. You know, he runs a business, a computer business.
Mm-hmm.
And every computer he sells, he installs pirated Windows on it.
Mm-hmm.
So we get these calls all the time. If your listeners are out there and they know about people who are pirating software, they can actually dial that number. There's nobody there right now because the office is closed today, but they can dial that number during the week. We're open, and we'd be happy to take that information.
And it's all confidential, right?
It's all confidential. If you want to make a report, hey, listen, we know that some people, especially people who are calling about a place where they work right now, the last thing they need is to have their name revealed to the boss as the person who reported the company. So we're very good at investigating information without identifying our sources.
Do these people get something for their information, or is it just a good feeling of knowing that they did something right?
Well, they did the right thing, and that is a good feeling. But no, we don't pay rewards. We thought about that. We thought, gee, we'd probably get a lot more calls if we offered rewards. But then, I guess we figured, look, you'd get a lot more calls, but you'd also get a lot of people who are calling for the wrong reason,
right?
Because they want to get some money out of it. And, you know, what I say to folks is, look, you know, if you make this report, we're gonna try as hard as we can. We're going to bust our butts to try and straighten out the situation. And if that's important to you, well, that's what we can do. But if you're calling for the money, we can't help you out.
And there was a local company here in our area that you just busted.
Well, we've had like a busy month. We've been busting companies and announcing the actions left and right. We had two announcements in North Carolina this month. One was with a company called Furnitureland South.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah, and then there was a second company called Profound Inc., which is owned by Dialog. And, you know, in both cases, I should say, these companies settled with the Business Software Alliance after an audit revealed that they had more copies of software programs installed on their computers than they had licenses to support.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, both of the settlements were over $100,000. So if people think this is a small type offense where you just, you know, it's like a parking ticket, they're wrong. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Bob, how do you...
Wait.
Go ahead.
Larry, before we get... We have to break away. Bob, can I put you on hold and we'll be back after the break?
Sure.
Yeah, thanks. It's good stuff.
Hold on. And your calls are coming up next right here on 850 The Buzz. And welcome back to Computers 98 on 850 The Buzz. And we're back with Bob Kruger, Vice President of Enforcement, the Enforcement Division at the Business Software Alliance. Bob, you with us?
Yep. We're here.
Larry. Okay, go ahead, Larry.
No, I've been thinking of lots of questions. Bob, you get a call from me and I say, look, company I'm working or I think has pirated software. So what happens next? What do you guys do, and how do you get into the company if the owner of the company says, yeah, right, take a hike?
Yeah, well, that does happen, but let me tell you what we do. First thing, Larry, I'll be honest, we're gonna keep you on the phone if we can to try and get as much information as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody calls me up and says, look, I used to work at a company, here's the name, go check them out, click. There's not a lot I can do with that information, so I'm going to try and get the caller to tell me as much as he can, you know, why does he think it's pirated? Was there ever any discussion about this at the office? What did the president say? Did anyone ever bring it to his attention? That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
once we've got information we think is reliable, we're going to try and do our own little investigation. As they say in the movies, we've got our ways of finding these things out. And you know, we hire private investigators. We do things to try and check to see if in fact the report is accurate. Once we've decided it's accurate, then we're going to take action. And here's one of the things that I think a lot of people don't know that we can do. If we get a really strong report, we'll go to a judge, federal district court judge, and we'll give them a look at our evidence, and we will ask for an order that permits us to go to the company unannounced and in the presence of U.S. Marshals and do a on-site inspection of their computers. And we've done this. We've done this in, you know, dozens of cases around the country. We haven't done it yet in North Carolina, but we hope to. And, boy, I got to tell you, I've gone along on some of these court-ordered audits, and, you know, it's a, from the company's perspective, that's an awfully rude way to find out that you've got a problem with your software.
Well, it's a disaster, I imagine.
Oh, my goodness. You show up at the door and knock, 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 and, hello, sir, I'm a U.S. Marshal, and these people are to be given access to your computers so they can do an audit. You know, and you could see the president, in some cases, turn to the guy who's running the computers and you know, when we leave, he must just say to him, how did we get into this position?
Mm-hmm.
What did you do wrong?
So you have the legal authority of the courts when you...
Yeah, you have we have the ability and we have the authority of the courts to go and do what they call, I guess, a surprise audit or a raid. Now, in most other cases where we don't do raids, We're going to hire attorneys, and we may give the company a chance to do its own audit. But the fact of the matter is, if they don't cooperate, we're going to court.
Okay, let me ask you this: let's say that there is a company that somebody called, and it's, you know, it's nothing, it's not really strong, and like
yeah.
what you're saying. And you call them, and they do their own audit, and they find out, yeah, we had three copies of this that somebody
yeah.
brought
yeah.
in. Would this company's be giving a chance to just say sorry, and we corrected the problem?
You know, I get that question because a lot of people say, well, gee, I thought you guys were really interested in compliance. And if a company says to you, look, you know, you identified a problem, we didn't know it existed, we've corrected it, and now we're legal,
yeah.
why isn't that good enough? And our answer is, listen, if we let every company we contacted do what they should have done in the first place,
yeah.
and every company will wait till they get calls from
right.
us, and
you're
then
right.
they'll do it.
You're right. You're right.
We have to
you're
create
right.
an incentive to get through it first. So what we tell companies is, look, if you want to avoid having to deal with us, deal with this problem on your own. But once you get identified to us, it's too late. Not only are you going to have to get legal, but we're going to make you pay a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what I say to companies is, look, deal with this now. It's much more unpleasant to deal with us.
Now, are the penalties they pay legal fines?
Well, you know what happens is if we go to court, we can collect damages of up to $100,000 per copyrighted work. That's what the law says.
Mm-hmm.
So when we go to a company and we say, look, do you want to deal with this in court or do you want to deal with this informally without having to spend a lot of money on lawyers?
Right.
And if they say, yeah, okay, look, we'll make a payment, that money, even though it's not like a payment from a court or from a judge, that money goes back into, since we're a nonprofit, it goes back into our anti-piracy enforcement and education programs. You know, one thing I should mention in case we don't, you know, get to it is, in addition to all this enforcement work, we do a lot of education work. We have, for example, a free guide to software management that people can obtain. Either go to our webpage, www.bsa.org, or you can call that number, 888-NO-PIRACY. We'll send you a free guide to software management. We even have a free audit tool that can help businesses and individuals figure out what's on their computers.
Very good. Good. That's important. Well, by the way, we had a suggestion for you to pass on to the manufacturers, because we were discussing this during the break about licenses.
Yeah.
One of the things, we talked about this home licensing, and you yourself said that these EULAs are just very difficult to read.
They can be.
I mean, why doesn't the industry come up with sort of standard divisions like a home license and a workstation license? A home license being obviously something like, you know, you have 2 and 3 PCs at home and you want to buy one copy of an office suite and you want to be able to run it on all three of them. It would be real easy for them to do that instead of trying to confuse people.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
they're not trying to confuse people. I just think that sometimes they don't have the right people.
Yeah, right.
I know. I work for a software company. I know what you mean.
I take your point, though. A couple things, though. One is people should know that the software companies, at least the ones we represent, they're not allowed by law to work together to do anything like that. Seriously, there's something called antitrust.
Oh, yes, that's a court battle going on right now.
Yeah,
that's all we need to tell Bill.
Yeah, all I need to do is say, let's get Lotus, Novell, Microsoft in the room. And I'm out of a job.
There you go.
It is a point. I think there is some movement in that direction. I think a lot of the publishers now are realizing that, you know, the way they're writing their license agreements, it's making it harder, not easier, for people to understand what's right and what's wrong. So I'm seeing some movement in that direction. Some of the licenses I've seen more recently are more user friendly, and I think we'll get to that point. And I think, but the one thing I would repeat is that, look, you know, to the extent they're not the same, consumers have to figure out ways take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
You should punish the companies that are too narrow with their licenses. You should make the ones that you should reward the ones that
yeah.
say, here,
the,
you do what you know, do whatever you want as long as you stay within these bounds.
And they and consumers did punish those companies that came up with the dongle on the back,
uh-huh,
the,
yes.
the key.
Yeah.
And they stopped buying that
right.
software, but and those companies did away with them.
Mm. That's exactly right. You know, people don't realize how much power they've got.
Oh yeah.
You know, you can tell these software companies. Now it's hard, of course, when you're dealing with certain products, because certain products there isn't a lot of choice. But there's still, you know, I think there's a lot more choice out there than some people know.
Yeah. Now something more practical for that everybody can relate to, and I don't know if this is something that you can answer, but when like Windows 95, 98.
Yeah.
And Office OEM versions of the software. How can one tell if they have a pirated copy of Windows 98?
It is a good question because, you know, in addition to all that Office copying we're talking about, there's a lot of people out there who have figured out that they can make money by selling pirated software.
Right.
You know, and they do it in a lot of different ways. They'll sell OEM products in a, you know, in standalone channel. They'll say, you know, it's supposed to come pre-installed on a computer, but they're selling it separately.
Right.
They'll sell academic software outside the academic channel. They'll
mm-hmm.
sell CD-ROMs, pirated CD-ROMs. They'll sell counterfeit software, stuff that really looks like the original and it's not. And then they'll, you know, then there are businesses out there that install pirated software on computer systems, and many consumers don't realize they're getting pirated software. So, you know, all these things, you go back to your question, how do you know? And how are you supposed to protect yourself if you're a consumer? You don't want pirated software. You want the real thing. Sometimes that's what you're paying for. How do you protect yourself?
Right.
Couple tips, at least.
Okay.
You won't know in every case, but obviously one indication right off is price. If first of all, if someone's throwing something in, you know, for free on a computer system, I had a guy who said, I'll pre-install as many different software programs as you want, no charge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's something wrong with that.
<You know? laughs> Really?
Figure that one out. There's something wrong there. If he's selling you legal software, he's paying somebody for it. So if he's throwing it in for no charge, he's not making any money. He's losing money. That can't be. That's too good to be true. You know, if you're buying software standalone and the price is just like way low, you see somebody offering Office for $39.95.
Right.
That's not legit.
Yes.
If you're not getting documents, if you're not getting this, if you're not getting a certificate of authenticity, in some cases, if you're not getting a manual, that doesn't always mean it's wrong, it's legal, but a lot of the times it does. And it would at least raise a red flag for me. You know, if I'm buying software from somebody and nothing's coming with it, you know, know, nothing that shows that I own this. No license agreement, no certificate of authenticity. Wait a second here. What's wrong with this?
Yeah.
If you look at the software for whatever reason, if you get something that's in print and it doesn't look right. Gee, I didn't know Microsoft blurred the colors on the on the box.
Yeah.
That shows you got a bad quality counterfeit. So, you know, and I'd say at the end of the day, look, if you're not sure but you're suspicious,
then
give us a call.
Give you a call or give the manufacturer a call?
Well, yeah, frankly, you should give the manufacturer a call, but you know, a lot of people don't have the numbers handy, and I would say, look, you could use this as a resource.
Okay.
You know, even if it's just to call me up and say, what is the toll-free number for Microsoft? They got a toll-free number for their anti-piracy work, too.
Sure.
You know, and I'll at least put you in touch with those people. So, if, you know, there's nothing that will tell you in every case, but I'm saying here, if you're not getting documentation, there's definitely something wrong with that transaction.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is there
something else that you want to add here? Because, I mean, we're going to have to break in about 2.5 minutes. We have questions, but I want to let you talk about what you want to talk about.
Well, you guys have covered a lot of the key points out there. You know, I guess, you know, from the standpoint of the listeners, I want them to know, of course, that, you know, the software companies, they're not in the business of chasing after people. They're in the business of creating software.
Right.
And trying to sell it. And that's what they'd rather be doing.
And make money.
Yeah, well, of course they want to make money. You know what I mean? One of the things I think a lot of folks don't realize is they think, well, gee, you know, Bill Gates is so rich, he won't miss my little contribution. I guess they don't realize that a lot of the money that the software companies, you know, use for research and development, the creation of new products, it comes from the sale of the products that are already out there.
Yeah.
And that if somebody spends years of their life and God, now it's like tens of millions of dollars and invests all their creativity into the creation of a software program, and then somebody else just copies it instead of buying it, you know, you're ripping this person off. You're destroying their incentives for creating new programs. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, a lot of people think of this as a victimless crime. It's not. You're hurting somebody.
Yeah.
You know, you're really hurting somebody. You're depriving them of their livelihood. You're depriving them of a return on their investment.
Absolutely. No, I think it's because it's software. It's an intellectual property. People don't think that it's a product.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a product.
No, you're definitely right about that. People draw some kind of a line in their head between a physical product and something like software, an intellectual product, and there really is no difference. From the standpoint of the guy who's busting his butt to create the stuff, he doesn't see a bit of difference between your stealing his intellectual property or his physical property.
Yeah, there are people who wouldn't take a T-shirt out of Walmart, but who would make a copy of a software program.
Well, look at it. That's a great way of putting it, because look at it this way. There are people out there who wouldn't go into Circuit City, take a software program off the shelf, stick it under their jacket, and walk out without paying for it. But the same people see a program on someone else's computer, and they'll copy it.
Yeah.
They haven't done anything different.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. All right, Bob. I appreciate your calling in. This is very good information here.
Well, I hope your listeners can use it.
I sure hope so. We'll know if you get some phone calls. The website again is www.bsa.org.
Yep.
And it's 888 no piracy.
That's right.
All right, terrific.
Well, thanks, Bob.
Have a good weekend. Go and enjoy the rest of it without any work.
All right.
Bye-bye. And your calls are coming up next, right here on 850 The Buzz. Welcome back to Computers 98 on 850 The Buzz. Let's go directly to the phone. Charlie.
Hi, I'm Nana. How you doing?
You've been holding patiently.
Well, that's fine, but I really enjoyed the conversation.
It was good, wasn't it?
It really was. It's fascinating. In fact, I might have to make a phone call.
Well, okay, good.
Hey, my question is, I have a laptop that I'm running under Windows NT going back to my corporate offices in Louisville. Mm-hmm. And our IS department upgraded me to Windows Explorer 4.0.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since I've done that, when I'm in the Internet Explorer, I can't print anything. If I go to print, it sends it to the print manager, and I look at the print manager, and it says spooling, and then deletes. It never goes to print.
What print do you? What printer do you have set up as your default printer?
It's a OfficeJet 550C.
And it is set up to do that.
That's correct.
You're printing from everywhere else.
I print from everywhere else. So the only thing I can do is to copy. Let's say I want to print an article from the Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm.
I have to copy it over to, like, Word, mm-hmm. and then print it from Word. It will not print from the Internet.
Listen, next week, I'll try it this week. I've got the same setup.
Okay.
I've got it on my laptop, NTN, Internet Explorer, and I'll try it at work. I mean, I do the same kind of thing.
And if
you
anybody
do.
Out there came across this and found a solution, please call in.
And it's interesting because one other salesman in our company has the same configuration, and he can't do it either.
Wow.
So something in Internet Explorer.
But I wonder if the IS department, when they upgraded, they did something.
They deny.
Of course.
The only solution they've come up with is to uninstall 4.0 and then download it again from the Internet and see if that fixes the problem. But it's got to be something in the setup.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, it's obviously your printer is working.
That's correct.
And your computer is printing from others, so it's got to be something in
the
setup.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Charles.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
For calling. Bruce, good morning. You're on 850 The Buzz.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Fine.
How are you?
Good. I had a general question. I've been doing a fair amount of upgrading of some of our older Pentium machines. And when you reformat the hard drive and go to reinstall Windows 95 and just do a clean system sweep, sometimes if you've got video cards, network cards, sound cards, and things like that, I get a lot more, if I leave them all in and go ahead and reinstall, I get a lot more problems troubleshooting IRQs and IO addresses than I do putting them in almost one at a time. Does that make a difference to put them one at a time? Is there a sequence that's better? Are there certain cards that are more difficult to configure in the system?
Not really, except if you... It's a Pentium, so you don't have to worry because of the serial ports take
right away
IRQ 4 and 3.
Right.
I've noticed that
network cards seem to be 11, the biggest problem.
11 or 12.
Right.
Yeah, network cards and modems like to grab the same IRQs, I know.
Right, and sometimes modems and sound cards. I just didn't know if there was a general... If it's always better to go ahead and put one card in per time. I mean,
no,
obviously easier troubleshooting if you have a problem right away. But
well, you can also take them out from the device manager and do it like that.
Right.
But the thing is here, the way that I always do it is COM ports, obviously, 4 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't need two serial ports and you put a modem in, then you put the modem as COM 2.
Right.
And you do away with the first one.
Right.
Sound card...
You mean you inactivate the COM ports in the BIOS?
Absolutely.
You just turn them off.
You deactivate them. You turn one off.
Right.
You leave one on.
Okay.
And you turn two off, and you configure your modem to be two.
Okay.
Then the sound card. Many times I'll put the IRQ 10.
Right.
Network cards will go on 11.
Right.
What else do we have? The printer will fall on
video card.
Video card
right.
does not have.
No,
one.
No, it's.
And then you still have IRQ 5 that you can use.
Right.
And that is being used mainly if you do want to have two serial ports plus the modem, then you put the modem on COM 3 IRQ 5.
Right.
And that should work.
Right.
I mean, it always works.
Right.
If you have other cards in there that that are not compatible
mm-hmm.
or that you don't know, then just turn them off or take them out.
Yeah, I think so. I think part of the problem may be some of the network cards we use are not plug and play, old ISA cards.
That's fine. There's nothing wrong. Actually,
right.
they're better.
Yeah.
Because you put the jumper in it, and that's
right.
it. You know?
You're right. You're right. Not relying on plug and play.
Absolutely.
That's right. Plug and play.
Exactly. The other thing I noticed, too, we just upgraded some BIOSes on some Dell machines to basically make them year 2000 compliant. And some of the old BIOSes did not designate an IRQ to your LPT-1 port. It didn't have a designated IRQ, and then the BIOS is upgraded, and it automatically does.
Right.
It kicks out whatever was currently using that BIOS, and We had some problems with that.
LPT1 always used IRQ7.
Right.
So that was in the operating system. I don't know. I mean, it was built in the BIOS.
Right.
You didn't have a way to configure it.
Right.
With a new BIOS, you can configure it.
Right.
And say, no, I want you to use IRQ such and such.
Right.
So that's why.
Okay. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling 850 The Buzz. And your calls are coming up next right here, 850 The Buzz. Welcome back to Computers 98 on 850 The Buzz. A number again, 860-0850, pound 850 if you're a 360 communication customer. And Don, you ask where in Cary you can get a Mac repaired. Give Computer Renaissance a call. They probably, if they cannot handle it, they'll tell you where. We were trying to remember where.
There's a place across from the fairgrounds, I think, but I can't remember that.
I know, that's the thing.
Yeah, call Computer Renaissance down in...
It's Crossroads.
Crossroads, yeah.
Yeah.
And either they'll do it or they'll know somebody who will.
And see what... Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah, Larry.
Okay. Aren't any of them in Cary?
But there's one problem here. If you have an Apple, you can't be choosy. You can't say in Cary. That's the one thing Don didn't understand. Is that when you have an Apple, you say, where can I have it repaired? And you may have to go to Hendersonville.
All I was saying is that the fairgrounds are in Raleigh.
Raleigh,
I'm just
absolutely.
Trying to help the man on the phone out.
Absolutely.
Thank you, John.
It's in Raleigh. It is in Raleigh, Larry. It is. Anyway.
I hate you both.
I hate you.
Yeah, and you're ugly.
Yeah.
Oh.
A line from one of my favorite movies.
Going back to what Bob was talking about as far as piracy.
Software piracy.
Mate. Hey, mate.
Oh, is this your pirate imitation?
Patch on your eye.
Oh, I want to cry.
It is interesting to know that that people... do have a way to report and stay confidential, and people are doing something about it, and we have the faxes to prove it.
Yeah.
That furniture company, Furnitureland, whatever, 200,000.
Furnitureland, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was 200,000.
Profound Inc. was the other one. Two North Carolina companies.
People should worry about it, and I would highly recommend. IS manager, forget about IS manager should do it, but I mean, wherever the buck stops,
yeah, people who have
all the way at the top, they should have an audit for to find out if you do have pirated software in your office on the computers, because when these people come in,
it's too late.
There's no such thing as, oh, I didn't know. You know, the tops you can do is maybe fire somebody, but the fine will still be there, and
right.
That's going to hurt you too. So higher-ups should look into it and make sure that they do not have pirated software. And I want to clear that also the fact that when I was talking about, you know, AutoCAD, you know, you don't use it and stuff. Of course, you don't keep it. I mean, but you were a pirate at one point or another. It's not something that I condone, but I can look the other way when people do that.
See, there are ways. I just thought of this when you were talking about that.
I sure hope you have time to talk about it.
Yeah, real quick. Big companies like Symantec
online
have trial versions and shareware versions for you if you're interested.
Absolutely.
And that's all legal, and
yep.
you can do it right, and then you can go buy it, and you're fine.
And who do you have to say bye today?
Oh, just Paula, who's at home. Becca's out doing some wonderful work with foster kids, and to my grandson.
New grandson. Right. Michael David. Congratulations again.
Thank you.
And good morning to... Kathy, and Hannah's on the way back from the mountains, so maybe she's already home, I hope. That's it for today. Thank you for tuning in to 850 The Buzz and to Computers 98, and thank you, John, for producing and
being our altogether helpful
as usual,
person.
As usual, practice safe computing. Back up your hard drive. Don't forget to use a virus scanner. We'll be back here next Saturday at 8.
No pirated software.
Right, no pirated software. Until then, keep your dial right here on the station that brings you IMS and Sports Bay, Solarde, Adam Gold, Morgan Patrick, Dr. Judy, and more. 850.
The Buzz.